The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media and the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. Welcome back to the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. I'm Ken Napsok, along with Joe Ruggiero, our Attitude Era expert. And Joe, welcome back, first of all, to the studios.
Well, thanks for having me. Glad we both survived the holidays.
We did survive the holidays, and as you can tell, we are in kind of a new surroundings here, the Wrestling Viewpoint Studios. We're kind of,
it's kind of the Wrestling Viewpoint Lounge at the moment.
It is. We were talking off air earlier that I kind of feel like we're in the Flair for the Gold segment on WCW TV.
It's very casual.
So the Wrestling Viewpoint Network took kind of an unexpected break during the holidays. That's what happens, folks. You get a little bit too much. Life takes you in different directions during the holiday season. But we're coming back strong in 2014. And the Wrestling Viewpoint Network has a lot of great shows for you. Of course, our flagship show is California Classic Wrestling with Dan Farron. Don't forget to visit his Facebook page. And Dan's been doing some mini casts, spotlighting certain people or events or months in the California Classic world and the history of California wrestling. More of that's coming. We got a lot of different shows. We're going to do a show celebrating just the fandom of pro wrestling. I'm going to bring Joe back for that, along with a friend of mine named Chris Kiefer. And some others. We're going to do it. We're going to do a series called "How to Be a Pro Wrestler," and we're going to bring in a lot of people: Steve Atkins and Paul Ventimiglia from Millennium Pro Wrestling, a lot of people like that, and Dan Farron, and talk about what goes into that, and Whiskey Fist McIntosh, and hopefully I'm trying to get Hobo on. A lot of those guys that we work with in Millennium Pro Wrestling. So, anyways, there's a lot of stuff coming on. So don't forget, folks, to subscribe on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at WrestlingVN. At WrestlingVN is the Twitter handle. But right now we're going to continue our look at the Attitude Era, WWF's golden age, 10 years or so after the first golden age of the 80s, comes the Attitude Era. And how do we say issues? Like, I'm reading comic books with you, Joe.
My work here is done.
Yes, yes. Thank you so for my now $45 a week habit.
You're welcome.
That's awesome. In episodes 1 and 2, we talked in the beginning of the Attitude Era, and then kind of the peak and the Monday Night Wars and all that kind of stuff. And that brought us up to
WrestleMania 2000.
Yeah.
The 16th installment, for those of you.
The first one without Roman numerals, correct?
Yeah, first one without Roman numerals. The first one with the heel winning.
Right.
Which crushed the hopes and dreams of Rock fans everywhere, and probably a few Foley fans.
Right.
Probably the Big Show fans didn't exist. But it was, you know, it's not necessarily one of the landmark WrestleManias, but it's a solid entry, highlighted by that match. It was main evented with a fatal four-way, Triple H defending against The Rock, Big Show, and Mick Foley, with a McMahon in every corner. Also on the undercard, you had a amazing triangle ladder match for the tag team championship with Edge and Christian, Dudley Boyz, and the Hardys. Edge and Christian winning that to capture their first tag team gold.
Right.
That is probably the best card, or the best match on the card.
Yeah, yeah, definitely one that definitely stands the test. I even know it, and you know I didn't watch a lot of Attitude Era wrestling.
Exactly. And then the triple threat with Angle, Benoit, and Jericho over the Intercontinental Championship and European Championship.
Right,
it was a little convoluted, but still.
Was that first fall gets the European?
The first. Angle had both belts.
Right.
And so the first fall was for the Intercontinental Championship, which Benoit won.
Right.
And then the second one was for the European, which Jericho won. So Angle went in with both, went out with none. A little convoluted and weird, but when you have those three in the ring, it's, you know, really doesn't matter what they're doing. It's just, it's going to be good.
Yeah, and I think it's a good WrestleMania. I do own it. And you know, and the refresh for the fans, I lived and breathed wrestling from the early 80s on. Then I stopped for a while and picked it up again, like I do now. I live and breathe wrestling. But I stopped during the Attitude Era.
The greatest part of all of wrestling, you completely missed it.
By late 1998, I had stopped watching on a regular basis and picked up again in about 2005.
Sure. Why not?
Right. And so about 2005, I was like, let me go kind of catch up. And I went to Best Buy, and I was looking at some of the digital video discs they had on sale.
Fancy.
And I selected WrestleMania 2000. And why, you ask, Joe, why?
Because you're a silly pervert.
Exactly. I looked on the back and looked on all the matches, and I'm like, Cat versus Terry Runnels in like a strip your clothes off match. going to buy this one.
And how'd that work out for you?
That was $24 I'd like to return. Yeah. Still. But own the DVD.
You didn't like the Mae Young Bronco Buster at the end?
Yeah, that might have been part of the problem. I hope, and I know at this point she's in grave condition, so
disrespect intended.
I did not pay the money to see Mae Young.
No, nobody did.
And at one point, I'm assuming, during, you and I went to Wrestle Reunion together a couple of years, and we were behind the line to check in. Mm-hmm. Jake Roberts was there, but also next to us was Kat and Sin Bodhi.
Yes.
And I just remember looking at her like, I should ask for my money back.
Yeah. Excuse me. You owe me $24, lady.
So, would you call this the height of the Attitude Era at WrestleMania 20?
Not necessarily WrestleMania 2000. I don't know.
Did I say 20?
You
Sorry.
Did, but it's okay.
I took off two zeros.
Yeah. Just because I don't know that the highlight of the Attitude Era can happen when Stone Cold Steve Austin's on the shelf.
Good
which
point.
He was at the time.
Outstanding point.
He had been... His neck had hurt him, so he'd been run over, quote unquote,
right,
at SummerSlam 99. So he actually had been out of action for a while and actually wouldn't come back full time for, I think, another 5 or 6 months.
Right.
Also, The Undertaker wasn't around at the time.
Oh, yeah, okay, good point. He was not at WrestleMania 2000. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he was out too with an injury. He was out for about a year also, and he was 3 months away from coming back.
I mean,
at WrestleMania 2000.
You forget he's going strong, kind of. I mean, he comes back and he puts on great matches. He has missed a few.
Yeah,
over the years.
He's skipped a couple, and this was one of them. So you know, I don't know that this was necessarily the peak, the highlight of the Attitude Era, but it was probably when they had the most momentum.
Right.
Overall, simply because even you know without Austin. WCW was in embers, which we'll get to. But, you know, they were riding high. Triple H as the champion and just in general was the most hated man in all of professional wrestling, to his credit.
Yeah.
You know, he gets a lot of flack sometimes for the game, for the politics
Trips.
and the
you know me, I'm a fan of Trips.
All that stuff.
I'll suck up the Trips.
Yeah, and I would argue,
not literally.
No. But and I would say certainly at this point and probably leading up to when he blew his quad out, he, even with as hot as The Rock got, as hot as Austin was, I'd say he was probably the best wrestler on the planet at the time, just because of the emotion he drew out from the fans, the way he played his character. You know, he was a perfect foil for Foley to go out against. Say that quickly five
perfect
times.
Foley, you did a lot better than I did.
I know, right? You know, and he was great going up against The Rock. They had an amazing, amazing, what's it called? Feud thing? That thing that they wrestlers do?
Feud things.
Feud thing.
Hey, you want to have a feud thing with me?
I will feud thing with you.
A great angle, promo, program, story, all of it.
And it did mark the true rise of The Rock. To leading up to, you know, he would peak at WrestleMania 17. You know, that was when, you know, he was truly on Austin's level.
Long removed from the Rocky Maya Villa era, long removed from the Nation of Domination beginnings, but so you're saying...
And even his corporate champ, you know, when he was the heel going up against Austin, you know, he was hated and people hate him, and certainly when he turned, it was a big thing, but, you know, he really... Once Austin was gone, they gave Rock the ball, he really ran with it.
Right.
And this was kind of his taking off.
Right.
You know, a lot of people criticized the fact that Triple H walked out of WrestleMania, you know, with the belt. They think, you know, that was the classic setup for The Rock to have his huge babyface moment, and he didn't. And, you know, I don't know. I'm sure it probably would have written a better story. Yeah. But, you know, he got the belt a month later.
But in the long run, did it hurt The Rock?
No. And that's the thing. You know, nobody's going to look back like, well... He was one of the greatest of all time, but man, if only he'd won the belt at WrestleMania 2000.
Sometimes,
you know, no one's saying that.
Sometimes a loss can make you even bigger. I look at Daniel Bryan in like 18 seconds or whatever at WrestleMania a couple years ago, and look where he is now.
Exactly. Yeah. No. And you know, for losing at WrestleMania 2000, if you watch the following Backlash when he did win, you know, the place went insane.
Right.
And
to my point, yeah.
And then, you know, and then he definitely reached the part where, you know, it was the same as whenever Austin, you'd hear that glass break, you knew Austin was coming out, the place would go crazy. It's the same as, you know, if you smell, place goes nuts.
Ooh, where it is today.
Yes.
Yeah. So he was already, by that point, he was a bona fide. He's bona fide. But
yeah,
perhaps
I mean, it's,
what you're saying to me, tell me if I'm wrong, is this cemented him as a legend.
Yes. Yeah, this era with Austin on the shelf and mm-hmm. him as, you know, having to be the guy and step up, and man, did he do it. And yeah, this is what made The Rock who he is now.
Yeah.
And this is why he's
the biggest grossing film star in the world right now.
Exactly. It's when he accepts his Oscar for his work in Fast 7, he will say, I owe this all to WrestleMania
to 2000. Austin being hurt.
To Austin breaking his neck in 1999.
Oh, wow. So coming out of it, they got to feel they're pretty high. WCW at this point's in shambles.
Yeah, it's circling the drain.
It's in a Russo-led Viking death ship.
Yeah, it was just a complete and utter disaster. Whereas WWF, yeah, they're still WWF, yeah. Is riding high. And, at this time, you know, they didn't have The Undertaker or Austin. Both those guys come back within the next Undertaker. Well, Austin makes a brief appearance at Backlash to hit Vince and Shane in the head with chairs.
As he should.
To help The Rock win the title.
Right.
Undertaker comes back at Judgment Day to accidentally cost Rock the title.
Mm-hmm.
Debuting his American Badass gimmick.
Okay, great. Let's talk about that. That's a good point because I was wondering, during that era, I'd tune in every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And I love The Undertaker.
Yes.
I watched Survivor Series, man, when he came out with Brother Love. I'm like, who is this guy? Oh, that's Mean Mark Callis from WC. Oh, man, what's going on? Oh, this guy's awesome.
Yeah.
When he beat Hogan at this Tuesday in Texas, I think the one before to set up this Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view. Oh, man, I love The Undertaker.
Yes.
And I tune in one night. I'll catch what's going on with wrestling. The Undertaker's riding a motorcycle, and he looks like he's band member for Limp Bizkit. What's going on? So this is when that happened.
Yeah, this is when that happened. He came back at Judgment Day. You know, there were some cryptic, these three little girls in the boiler room, and they go, "He's here." And then this Limp Bizkit.
Could you do that again for me?
"He's here."
Oh, thank you.
And it started with Kid Rock before he transitioned to Limp Bizkit.
Okay.
And then American Badass starts playing, and here comes a motorcycle, and he's got a bandana on and a big leather trench coat. And with you, you know, I'm the same huge Undertaker fan. You know, he watching him is probably what got me watching wrestling you know, to the frequency that I did. And so, you know, and I was all pumped because I heard, you know, I had heard that, you know, I didn't watch the event.
Yeah.
I had just heard, Undertaker came back last night at Judgment Day. I was like, yes, awesome.
Yeah.
And I turn on Raw and you know, he comes out to fight people. I'm like,
Now, I'll say this, though. I believe, and people hear me say this all the time on wrestling podcasts and AfterBuzz TV and everything, I believe the key to longevity in wrestling is evolving and developing your character over the course of time.
Yes.
The fact that Undertaker from 1990 came out as a Undertaker, literally as that's what his character was.
Yes, he was an undead whatever.
An undead Undertaker, and goes and fights his brother who burnt up in a fire and all those kind of wrestling-based stories, to have this guy some 25 years later still kind of doing that character again, I understand that he had to evolve the character. So I'm certainly not undercutting what he did.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I think he did this era, you know, as well as, you know, I mean,
for the time.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, I definitely get it.
It fits in the time.
Yeah. I wanted my dead man.
Now, well, up until his injury, had he been doing the whole Acolyte thing and sacrificing? That's what had been going on, right?
Yeah, that was, you know, once Austin won the title, he feuded with Undertaker first, and Taker, you know, wasn't winning, so he slowly turned heel.
Yeah.
Kind of his most vicious time, you know, this was also the time of the King of the Ring against Foley.
Gotcha.
You know, that
famous. Yeah.
And then he just kind of went full-blown heel and went satanic. and yeah. he formed the ministry, and he was trying to sacrifice Stephanie McMahon and crucifying.
Yeah, see, and I had been watching up until then a little bit, off and on. I did kind of wane because I moved to L.A. and I didn't have my own TV anymore, and I had to share the TV. And this was before the age of computers, you can watch things on your iPhone and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I would tune in a little bit. Now, maybe it's because I was raised a good little Christian boy. Yes. When he started trying to sacrifice people, yeah. I was like, ah, this is just not my thing.
Yeah, no, it. I mean, if you look at what he was doing before he took his break... he was kind of going a little overboard, and, you know, he's chanting, rolling his eyes back, and, doing sacrifices as the acolytes.
But
he's
people liked Midian. It, though.
Yeah, no, he liked it, and he was a good opponent for Austin and The Rock and, you know, everyone. But just kind of for what the WWF was doing once he came back, you know, an undead zombie dude might have been a little harder to swallow as opposed to just a big tough dude who's going to punch you in the face.
Do you think what would happen if I'm putting it up there here on the fly here? What would have happened in your mind if he had done that earlier, maybe 2 years earlier? What you know, thinking of badass Undertaker on a motorcycle around the time of Tyson and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Would it have fit in
probably
a little better then?
Yeah, I mean, or even
had a bigger effect.
Well, and I just, you know, maybe I just have enough faith in him to have figured out how to make it work regardless.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would have, it would have
fair enough
worked. Because The Undertaker, for as classic as his gimmick is, and as well as he portrays it, you know, it's a bit cartoony.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly a lot of the Attitude Era, the theme was getting real.
Yeah.
And getting past the, you know, the clown wasn't coming out anymore.
Right, right.
You know, and it... You know, your guys were The Rock, and you had Triple H and Austin. Just, you know, guys who just want to get in there and fight. You know, really the only gimmick that was like his was Kane. But even that was a completely different thing because he was just this big, masked, lumbering monster.
Right.
I think he probably could have pulled the biker gimmick off sooner.
Yeah.
I'm glad he didn't just because I liked me the dead man, but...
Right. Well, I'm again, sure. When you think Attitude Era, we definitely mostly associate it with Austin, Rock, Triple H, DX, all that stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Part of the thing every week, though, was Undertaker sacrificing people.
Yeah.
That definitely was one of the more popular running storylines.
Yeah. No, he was trying to, you know, the debut of Stephanie McMahon on WWF television was him going after her and trying to...
Well, unless you're counting her and those commercials for the Halloween stuff back in the 80s.
Well, yes, of course.
You know, Piper counts that.
Yeah. Well, yes, there's that. But
Daddy's little girl came out.
Daddy's little girl, you know, hiding in the back where, you know, Undertaker's trying to marry her.
And I've always enjoyed Stephanie, even now as the authority figure. I've always said thought she does good, man.
Yeah, I don't necessarily like. I mean, I don't really like much of anything they're doing these days.
Hmm.
But and I think her voice might be deeper than both of ours at this point.
Now it is. It didn't always.
It's a little weird, but certainly you know back in this at this time and you know as playing, as Triple H's wife, and she was his on-screen wife long before she was his real one. She was fantastic.
Yeah.
Can't nobody screech quite like Stephanie McMahon.
Can't nobody screech. No. Make a t-shirt of that.
Yeah.
So you've got the return of The Undertaker in Austin, and where are some of the main storylines, and how was it? Was it still popping with the same vibrance in summer 2000 as it was 2 years earlier?
Yeah. No, it was, and if anything, bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, first Triple H and The Rock were fighting over the belt, and then Triple H kind of segued into something with Jericho, so Angle stepped up. I think Rock defended against Benoit at one point, which is a really good, you know, underrated match. Granted, it's weird to say good things about Benoit at the moment, but you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Angle actually had a really good run of his own with the title because he ended up beating The Rock for it. He was actually the defending champion during the 6-man Hell in a Cell,
right?
When Austin came back, that's just when everything was huge because you had. The best all of the best, all at the same time.
It's crazy. It's a crazy roster. Now let's talk a little bit about Angle. I love Kurt Angle and what he does in the ring. Don't want to get in a car with him.
No.
But I really, really think Kurt Angle will go down in history as one of the underrated legends of wrestling. I would say he's a legend.
Yeah.
His work in TNA, he's put on some spectacular matches in TNA. I think TNA gets a bad rap sometimes, but he's done some great stuff there. During this time, he was I know he had a little bit of a bigger run after, but during this time, he kind of came into his own, and this is an amazing transition from a Olympic hero to a sports entertainer.
Yeah.
With some chops.
Serious chops. He, his winning of the 2000 King of the Ring.
Yeah.
The way he played that off and then had his little crown and his, scepter and just, the way he played that off was amazing.
Yeah.
He kind of outdid all the other smarmy heels who had won King of the Ring before. Yeah. He really owned it and was like, no, really, look how great
I am. And they had tried to pass him off, understandably, as a face.
Yeah.
For a long time when he came in. How'd it go?
No, when he came in, he was kind of the condescending, I'm your hero. But
correct me if I'm wrong. So, again, I didn't watch this era. So he started out like that. Where did he go from there? How did the character evolve?
He was kind of this smart. He was kind of had a comedy sense to him. But he would come out and deliver these speeches before his matches about how, I'm going to set a great example for all you kids out there with my three eyes, and you're all going to want to grow up and be just like me.
Right.
But he was doing it all with a big, smarmy, you have to root for me because I'm amazing and I'm your hero and your life suck. So you have to listen to me because you can't possibly accomplish anything on your own. You sad, fat, degenerate.
Okay.
Stupid.
I stand corrected.
Yeah. No. He was a real jerk when he came in, and it just got worse and worse. By which I mean better and better.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so then by the time he won King of the Ring, he was full on, oh my God, I am your king.
I'm Kurt Angle.
Worship me. And everyone wanted to see him. You wanted to see Triple H get his butt kicked because he was a jerk.
Yeah.
You wanted to see Angle get his ass kicked because he was a loudmouth doofus.
Yeah.
Who, like you were kind of scared of Triple H. You weren't scared of Angle. You just wanted him to shut the hell up.
But what I think Angle can do and did do is there is that legit side to him.
Yeah.
Where he could wrap you up into a pretzel.
Yeah. No, he could, and he could go with the best of them, and he was in the ring with the best. He had some great matches with The Rock, great matches with Triple H. He had, when The Undertaker was, part of the American Badass thing, he started to transition into this MMA guy where, now he's using submission holds and moves and stuff like that. And he had a really underrated match with Angle.
Yeah.
And, and then, of course, Angle versus Benoit.
Right.
I mean, two
guys can go.
Those two, I could watch them wrestle anytime.
Certainly
at the time, anytime I was like, oh, Angle and Benoit are going to go, it's like, well, it's going to be good.
Right. They know what they're doing. And Angle's so good at comedy. He really is an underrated comedic performer.
Yeah, no, he could be hilarious. Yeah. He was one of those great heels who can always show ass.
Yeah.
Because, and he'll be, screaming at you like, shut up, don't laugh at me, in a way that just makes you want to laugh more. He played his role perfectly.
So this is his era where he's kind of coming into his own then too, right?
Yeah.
Setting himself. Again, we talk about this. Just imagine, this truly is a golden age where everywhere around that locker room, you look around, there's someone doing something spectacular for all time.
Yeah. No, you look at these cards and you see the names on them, and it's just, their undercard. Their undercard then would have been a great main event. Like, you've got guys Jericho, Angle kind of fluctuated between when he had the title or he'd still be that upper mid card. You had the guys who had turned from WCW, Malenko and Saturn, but more so, the great Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah,
Chris Benoit. Kane was still around, and he was a part of some fun storylines, kind of, him going against X-Pac and then him going against Jericho. Big Show, you could throw him into anything.
Yeah.
Probably the most underrated big man ever.
Yeah, I mean, now he's kind of the last of the big men, so to speak. I mean, he's got his career. Look at his career too. I mean, it's been very long and very good.
Remember when he could moonsault?
I do, absolutely. I do.
It was crazy.
I've seen it.
Yeah, and you know, and those are all just the singles performers. You know, we haven't even really gotten into tag teams yet.
Well, I want to talk about the rise of the tag teams because this tag team wrestling is near and dear to my heart. It's just one of the things I love. Grew up watching the British Bulldogs, Hart Foundation, Demolition, Road Warriors, like you and I. You know, you did too, I know.
I like all those words.
Yes, all those words are pretty. So I love tag teams, man, and absolutely. I hate it when wrestling, when WWE, not wrestling, when the WWE downplays the tag teams. Right now, they're kind of trying to get it up again. They don't seem to commit to it at
some ones.
Down at NXT, there's a lot of great talent and a lot of good tag teams. I could see what happens. This era has an amazing collection of tag teams doing amazing things. And, I'm using the word amazing and an amazing amount of times.
Yes, and you know, and actual tag teams, not. Yeah, where they do the ragtag of, you know, well, this guy just
don't
go
like
with this
that.
Guy. No, no.
I don't like that at all.
No, me neither. But, you know, you've got Edge and Christian, quote-unquote, brothers.
Yeah.
You know, the Dudley Boys, quote-unquote, brothers. Hardy's actual brothers.
Brothers.
You have...
Acolytes?
Yeah, the Acolytes.
Yeah.
Bradshaw and Farouk, who would just come down and, you know, first they were the Acolytes under the ministry, and they were these scary, kind of spooky dudes.
Yeah.
Then they turned into the Acolyte Protection Agency, these, you know, cigar-smoking, beer-swilling dudes.
Which...
Who would just come down and beat the crap out of anyone for any reason.
Retrospectively, I have watched a lot of the APA stuff and hilarious stuff.
Oh, the APA was amazing.
Yeah.
When they finally got, like, their own office in the back,
yes.
You know, with the door.
And
they play their poker game. Oh God, all those skits were awesome, and you know, and even Too Cool, which
probably sell me on Too Cool.
I find it hard to, but God bless them, they were over.
They absolutely were.
You know, probably the most undeserving to be over over tag team ever.
Right.
You know, the Worm, one of the stupidest moves in all of wrestling. Brian Christopher just.
Grandmaster Sex Aid.
Grandmaster Sex Aid was just ugh.
Yeah.
But you know, it worked. People loved them.
It did.
The people went crazy for the Worm.
I remember when Christopher came out as Grandmaster Sex Aid about 2 years ago during the Lawler Cole feud.
Oh yeah.
The audience didn't react to it at all, which I thought was tragic.
Yeah.
Because I even again. Not watching it consistently during that era, even I was like, yeah, dude, give me Scotty Too Hotty next, and I'm sold.
No, they're one of those acts where at the time I totally bought into, and now I look back and go, what the hell was I on? like, wow, I'd never realized how much weed I smoked back then.
So,
my God.
So, maybe that factored into it. But,
maybe.
But so you've got, I mean, again, at the top, you got Rock, Angle, Triple H, Undertaker coming back, Austin, even though he's hurt, he's still around. You got Jericho, Guerrero, Benoit, and then you got these tag teams, like you mentioned, just killing it.
And putting on these insane matches. Like, you know, I talked about the triple threat triangle match or triangle ladder match, you know what I mean?
Yes.
WrestleMania 2000, then the first TLC at SummerSlam 2000, which just set the bar.
An amazing level. That bar got blown out of the water.
Yeah. You know, just completely changed the game, period, forever. Not just as far as tag team wrestling, but just wrestling, like what can be done in a match with stuff.
With stuff,
you know, and
stuff
and,
that breaks,
and you know, attempted to be recreated. And probably only one match. I would say I think the second one's better than the first, not by much. It's really close.
I would agree. Good, yeah, I've seen both, and I agree.
And that's it. Like, nothing else touches either of those matches.
Yeah,
certainly none of the following. You know, good, but not you know those two.
What do you think fueled the success of these tag teams?
The performers, you know, the way. I mean, just Edge and Christian were awesome. They had their, you know, 5 second pose.
Right.
You know, just the way they all worked together. The Hardys never really had much in the way of personality, but then they go in the ring and they're flippy flopping all over the place. And
Flippy flopping is a term we coined in Millennium Pro Wrestling for all those wrestlers.
Yep. And the Dudleys were the perfect, you know, they were the tough guys.
They had come from ECW.
ECW.
Which, you know, we haven't really discussed yet, and we will a little bit later, but. Mm-hmm. It's fair to say on some level that the Attitude Era owes a little bit of gratitude to ECW.
Oh, just a wee bit.
Just a wee
bit. Maybe a scooch.
If Paul Heyman was here now, I'm sure he'd probably say...
I think he might... attempt to take some credit for a few things.
And part of that crew were, of course, the Dudleys.
Yeah. No, they made their name in ECW. And, you know, and then once they came to WWF, just blew up.
What year exactly did they come? Was it 2000 or a little bit before?
No, I think they came in like 99, maybe even late 98.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't necessarily hit fire immediately once they walked out, but I think they really started...
Yeah,
99. Probably.
Then they started putting fire on tables in WWE rings.
Yeah, and, you know, and putting Mae Young through a table. And
yes,
but you know, yeah, because they, you know, they had that. Especially once they were heels. I mean, eventually they kind of turned face and started doing that "what up" thing, which was but you know, when they were still the bad guys, and you know, you keep your hide your women and children because they'll put anybody through a table. Yeah.
Hide your men, hide your wives. I love the Dudleys, man. I love what Bully Ray is doing right now in TNA. I think it's great. And we talked too about, again, I talk about the evolution of characters, and for Edge and Christian to come out of the Brood, which was an over gimmick with Gangrel. To come out of that and slowly transition into this legitimate tag team title contending comedy act at the same time.
Yeah.
That's another, to me, one of the historic evolutions of character in wrestling history.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, they, you know, they go from these vampire things, you know, and then were part of the ministry for a bit, and then just kind of evolved into these, you know, kind of the smarmy, goofy jerks.
Yeah.
But who you love them.
Right.
You know, because they, you know, the five second pose started kind of the same way as Angle's, like, you're all going to root for me because I'm great, is, you know, they were coming down going, well, here we are.
Yeah.
And since we're so amazing, we'll stand still for 5 seconds, take a picture of us. And, you know, and it kind of turned them face with the people because they're like, yeah, no, you are amazing.
That's the best heels always get the love in the end. It's the Boba Fett factor.
Yeah.
And
just the way those three teams complemented each other in the ring.
Right.
Is just
That's what's always so amazing to watch those triple threat matches from those pay per views and everything.
Yeah, the Dudleys had their tables; they were the heavies. Yeah. You know, the high flyers or the Hardys with their ladders, and then Edge and Christian fit in perfectly right in the middle. Yeah,
could do both,
just being the balance.
Could do that amazing spear. That spear. You watch it in slow motion. It's all right. It's not quite as impressive. It's not on that level of Foley flying off a cage.
No, but it's still
close.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I mean, you know, Hardy's hanging there. You know, it's like, what, good 10, 15 feet above the ring, and just bam.
Look, you and I have both competed in battle royals and had to go over the top rope. That's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, no, I
for
was...
For us non-athletes,
it's amazing
manager
neither of us,
characters that we are.
It's really amazing neither of us did serious injury to ourselves doing that.
But to then spear someone from a 20-foot ladder while they're hanging from a belt, get out of here with that. That is an amazing, brave moment, if you ask me.
Or, you know, Jeff does that swanton onto Bubba through, like, 19 tables.
To me, one of the lasting images of that era. Again, that's why you have to stop and give a lot of credit to these tag teams.
Yeah.
Because they created some of the more memorable in-ring moments of the Attitude Era.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, you went... Story-wise, you went with... You went for Triple H. You went for The Rock. Right. You went for Angle. But when it just came to something cool happening in the ring, these were the guys you turned to.
So let's go to what is perhaps the biggest moment of the Attitude Era, really, when you think about it, is the end of WCW.
Yeah, Vince wins.
Vince wins. The Monday Night Wars end in a whimper.
Yeah, with just that the final flush. The final Monday Nitro, I think it was March 26, 2001, about a week before WrestleMania 17.
Okay, yeah.
They do this simulcast.
Right. And I was watching this because I'd heard, it's like, no, did this really happen?
Yeah.
Let me tune in and find out.
Yeah, and Monday Nitro, I had to check my remote. I'm like, why is Vince McMahon on TNT? What's
going on?
What the hell is happening? And I mean, granted, the writing had been on the wall for a year and a half. I mean,
we could fill an entire another 4-part series on the death of WCW,
and we probably will.
Read that book, the great one from the guys from behind WrestleCrap.
Yeah, definitely. It was just a matter of time, and Vince wins. He buys out his competition.
Yeah, well,
so long.
Storyline. Shane buys it,
of course, as part of the ever entertaining McMahon feuds with each other. But yeah, the Attitude Era, mission accomplished.
So the Attitude Era is not officially over at this point, and they're still riding very high.
Yeah,
coming off of WrestleMania 2000 and then through what we've just been talking about and leading up to WrestleMania X7, which you proudly proclaim as the perhaps the greatest pay-per-view event ever?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think for what they were doing at the time, for the performers involved, just for how it went and... It really was, you know, a week after their hated rival dies with a rumor.
Right.
And then they go on and they put on this spectacular show. And this was one of the first WrestleManias that really felt gigantic in scope. You know, I mean, they'd always been in big arenas.
Okay. I know what you mean. Okay.
But,
continue,
But like probably not since WrestleMania 6 had even just the venue been so awe-inspiring.
Where you six, just look, six was Toronto.
Six was in Toronto.
Was X7 in Toronto?
X7, no, 18 was in Toronto.
Okay.
I think 17 somewhere in Texas. Maybe you can look that
up. I'm looking that up right now. Yeah, I know you're the...
I want to say it was like San Antonio or something, or maybe Dallas. I don't know.
I'm sure there's people screaming at their iPhones right now listening to this on
iTunes. I apologize for forgetting. Houston, maybe? I think
is it Houston?
I feel like it was somewhere in Texas.
I'm sorry. I'm typing in... I'm trying to type... I typed in X7, and it sent me to a page of Rockets.
Yeah, they'll do it. You might want to put WrestleMania before.
It was Houston, Texas. WrestleMania 2000 was at Anaheim.
Yes.
Houston was WrestleMania X7. And to your point about this being one of the first big ones, just look at this attendance, all right?
Yeah.
So you have WrestleMania 8 in Indianapolis, Indiana, at the RCA Dome, 62,000 in attendance.
Yeah.
Before that, you had the Coliseum, 16,000, but you also had WrestleMania 6 in Toronto, 67,000. Yeah. So along the way, you're averaging 16, 18, well, it's not averaging, I'm just in general. You got 16, 18, 16, 18, 18, 19, 20,000. WrestleMania 2000, 18,000 plus people. WrestleMania X7 in the Houston Astrodome, 67,000 in attendance.
Yeah.
The next year in Toronto, 68,000. So you are absolutely right when you say this one felt big.
Yeah. You know, it's the grandest stage of them all, and it really started looking at, you know, the entryway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the first time they really did kind of a big, you know, super special setup. You know,
right.
I mean, they always had a little something, but this was really, you know, the Titantron was gigantic.
Yeah.
And
if you go back to WrestleMania 10 at the Madison Square Garden's a tiny venue compared to the other big ones. But yeah, you have just like a door.
Yeah,
with a Roman numeral 10 on it. That's WrestleMania 10, and you go to 17 X7, and you've got, like you said, just what we know now, giant,
it's gigantic. You know, the entry ramp alone. Right. You know, so it was the first WrestleMania to really, you know, fit the supposed spectacle of WrestleMania.
Right.
I thought. And just, I think the card itself was great.
Let me run down the card here.
Yeah.
You got Chris Jericho and William Regal for the Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah. That's the opening match.
The opening match. Taz and the APA, which is formerly the Acolytes, now the Acolytes Protection Agency, against Right to Censor, which, of course, we haven't talked about that much yet,
which was
a great angle.
I
enjoyed the angle. It's Vince, once again, kind of poking fun at those that attack him.
Yes.
You had Kane and Raven.
Mm-hmm.
Coming over from ECW at this point in the Big Show. Eddie Guerrero and Test, who is an underrated performer.
Yep.
He's known tragically for his demise, unfortunately. But Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. China and Ivory. And Ivory could work.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, two great women wrestlers.
I rode an elevator with her, Cauliflower Alley.
Yeah,
that was one of my try not to be a mark moments. That was it.
I like the way she's put together.
Yes, Shane McMahon versus Mr. McMahon.
Yes,
with Stephanie in McMahon's corner, Vince's corner.
For all its nonsense, was a great spectacle. I mean, it had Shane doing the Van Terminator, pillar to one post to the other, trash can in Vince's face. I mean, we'll talk about the McMahons specifically, later, but. But, it was a fun, weird, crazy spectacle match.
You got Edge and Christian versus Dudleys and the Hardy Boys again in a TLC match. Iron Sheik, of course, comes back and wins the 19-man gimmick battle royal.
Well, there's that.
Last eliminating Hillbilly Jim. Undertaker defeats Triple H. The streak's still alive. And finally, Stone Cold Steve Austin defeated The Rock in a no-DQ match for the WWF Championship. Austin Rock.
I mean, tell me that's not a stacked card.
Very stacked.
And the matches,
might be right.
Yeah, I just might.
You might be right. And they're riding so high, and the Attitude Era has come to this point, do you feel?
Yeah. This, I would say, would be the peak of the Attitude Era. Okay. Might also be its ending. We'll talk about that in a sec. But it was definitely the high point. That was, this was the apex.
Mm-hmm.
Austin, because it was Austin and The Rock at their hottest.
Right.
It was the peak of both those two performers who I consider to be the two greatest of all time. Meeting,
right?
And they're both baby faces going into the match, not coming out, but going into the match. So, the two biggest fan favorites. I think I said last time that it was almost Hogan versus Hogan. Like it wasn't even Hogan versus Iron. It's Hogan versus Hogan. And so by that alone, it should have been the biggest event. But then you also throw out TLC 2, which again I think is the better of those first two TLC matches, and therefore the best overall.
Yeah,
Undertaker, Triple H beat the crap out of each other. I mean that's a pretty underrated and kind of forgotten and certainly ignored by them over the last few years for some odd reason.
When Trips fights Taker at these those back to back, they went back to back, didn't they?
Yeah,
it was Michaels. Triple H, now Punk, at the WrestleManias. The first time they met, it was like the first time they met.
Yeah. and it was like, no, they did this 10 years ago. No, didn't they do... They did three with Triple H, didn't they?
No, I think it was just two.
Oh, thank God.
It was just two.
Okay.
Because last year we had Punk versus Undertaker, which was a pretty good match.
Yeah, and before that was the Hell in the Cell.
Yeah, considering Undertaker... has trouble walking when he's not wrestling.
No kidding. Yeah, but even though they for some reason have forgotten this match ever happened, it's really great. I mean, they go out into the crowd, they're falling off of the camera stand, they beat the hell out of each other. I mean, it's a really good match, and the feud leading up to it was really well done too.
How did they carry it out? How did they execute that?
This is Triple H went out one night and was talking about how he'd beaten everybody who mattered. Mm-hmm. And Undertaker came out and went, "Excuse me. Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
Remember me?"
I hope to God that was the voice he used. Hey. Yeah.
Hey, guy.
Hey.
And
over here.
Yeah, and one of my favorite matches was this really great visual of they were backstage and Triple H had Undertaker pinned on the floor with a chair on his neck. Mm-hmm. It was just like, no, I'm tougher than you.
And they put on, in the last couple of years, they put on pretty good matches, I believe.
But they can do that 10 years before.
Yeah, add 10 years of youth into it.
Yeah, Hunter, I think Hunter pre-quad injury, is probably the best just pure wrestler on the planet. And then going against Taker, where he was still kind of evolving.
Yeah, and to clarify for those, I mean, you're not talking about just pure work rate. You're just talking the entire package.
Yeah, I'm talking
what he brings.
If you're going technical, it'd be Angle or Benoit.
For the whole. I know there's some people on the internet who will tweet in. Triple H's 5-move work rate is not compared to others.
Well, and he had a hell of a lot more than 5 moves back then, though.
Yeah. Absolutely, as yeah. youth can afford you. I mean,
yes.
Again, like I've said before, I said on AfterBuzz TV recently. I mean, the guy was trained by Killer Kowalski. He came from another era. He was not a byproduct of a performance center. He learned the hard way, and I think he knows a little bit about wrestling, and people don't give him
just
enough
a wee
credit.
Bit. Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, different subject. I think the Performance Center NXT is going to help launch WWE into a not necessarily another golden era, but another damn good era.
Yeah.
But we could talk about that another time.
Yes.
So WrestleMania X7, as you believe, the greatest pay per view ever. They hit the big crowd. It feels like an event coming out of it. Then they've defeated WCW. McMahon's victorious. And where do we go from here?
Well, now we walk out of WrestleMania 17 with the unthinkable. Heel Stone Cold Steve Austin aligning himself with Vince McMahon.
Okay. One of perhaps the more controversial moments, according to fans.
Yes.
Still not wanting that to happen.
No.
To this day, they're kind of pissed off. Where do you stand on that?
I think in retrospect, it was some of the more fun work Austin did. Because, you know, even though he was a heel... Mm-hmm. He pretty quickly turned into kind of a goofy heel. You know, he was singing with Kurt Angle and, right. you know, hugging Vince McMahon. You know, he wasn't really the menacing, threatening dude for long.
Right.
Although a lot of that was by necessity once Triple H, you know, his leg blew up. But but I liked it. You know, I because, you know, Austin, he'd been doing this kind of the same thing. You know, this right. was WrestleMania 17. He had really come into his own WrestleMania 13. That's 4 years, you know, so right. 4.5 years or so of...
Which is funny, back then was a different... That seemed like a lot longer. You look now, you know, it's like Punk has already been kind of on top of the game for like 2 or 3 years, and it seems like a blip. And I know it's just because you and I are getting older.
Well,
but
yes.
I mean, you look back then, like from 13 to 17, that's a long run. That's a different era at 13 to 17. A lot changed. So, I get what you're saying.
And,
for
you
4 years plus years doing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about how Undertaker has to reinvent himself. Certainly, Austin hadn't been around that long, but still. So, you know,
Austin had the damn right to change what he wanted.
He definitely did. I think it was probably one of the longer heel turns.
Yeah.
Just because of how it played out in the match. Like, you know, Vince comes down, you would think it should have been Vince comes down, throws him a chair, hits Rock, match over.
Right.
Shake hands, but it's like he throws him a chair, he hits him, then he keeps hitting him, and they like basically the two of them just beat the crap out of the Rock for 10 minutes, you know. And you know, granted, the Rock was going away, you know, he left for 4 months to film, I think it was his part in Mummy 2,
Mummy
or it
may
have been
Scorpion King.
That was Scorpion King for 4 months.
Yeah.
You know, see, he aligns himself with Triple H, and that the 2-man power trip.
Yeah,
very very good tag team in faction, and you know, they feuded with the Hardys, they feuded with Undertaker and Kane, they feuded with Benoit and Jericho, and then Triple H unfortunately hurt himself, so Angle steps up, and then they start the Invasion storyline, which is a whole thing.
Do you want to get into the Invasion now?
No, I want to save it.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that's stay tuned for Joe's thoughts on the Invasion, but But you know, it just overall, it's you can see things kind of starting to decline. I mean, it was still, you know, the WWF, soon to be WWE in a couple years, still, you know, once they've won, they still had very good, you know, years on top. But as far as the excitement factor, the greatness factor that was the rise of the Attitude Era, you know, it peaked at 17, and you know, The hills and valleys kind of got more pronounced.
Okay, yeah,
from here on
well
out.
Said. And you know, when you take out that competition, it's well documented in wrestling, and then we see it in life too. Without competition, it's kind of breeds complacency.
Yeah.
If you don't have anyone pushing you behind, and let's be clear, without WCW running as hot as they were back in 95, 96, 97, I mean. Without that, WWE kind of can, as we see now, can just do whatever the hell they want, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, once WCW was gone, nobody was going to touch them.
Yeah. And so here you go. Yeah. The invasion, so to speak, doesn't necessarily start in full, but a week before WrestleMania 17, you got Shane McMahon saying, "I bought it," and that was storyline, but in reality, Vince had crushed his competition. He was gone, essentially erased from the map, and now the Attitude Era is starting to wind down. When do you think it actually officially ended?
I think, and just for me, because I like my symmetry, I'd say the Attitude Era really officially fully ended at WrestleMania 19.
Okay. Two more years later. Okay.
Because, you know, though things were never quite as good as they had been in the Attitude Era, they were still edgy stuff. There's blood everywhere.
Right, you know. Right. You could still see some puppies every now and then.
Still see some puppies. Right. You know, you had Trish Stratus and Lita running around. Stacy Keibler. That was a golden era.
You just named my three favorite divas of all time. Yeah.
Yep. Mine too. But I think it one match at WrestleMania 19 kind of shut the door on the Attitude Era, and that would be The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin for the third time at WrestleMania. Stone Cold Steve Austin's final match, final real match. You know, he's come back and beaten up people, but he hasn't had an official match since.
Right.
You know, Rock hasn't been a full-time performer since, you know, no matter how often he shows up on.
right.
So you had the two leaders of the Attitude Era walking off into the sunset together. Yeah. So, you know, for my cute little box of it starting at WrestleMania 14 with Austin, it ends at WrestleMania 19 with Austin.
What were some of the highlights between then, 17 and 19? I know at 18 you have Hogan Rock, which is a great moment. What are some of the things that stand out during that era?
Well, after 18 you had the rise of Brock Lesnar.
Gotcha.
Which is pretty great. You had Angle kind of take his game to a whole other level.
Right.
You had Edge break out into the great singles performer that he is, well, was. Benoit, again, all things considered, he was still...
Yeah.
You know, their title match, I think it was in 02 against Angle, where then at the end of the match, everyone stands up and gives Benoit a standing ovation as he's walking out, you know. Great moment, all things considered. If you want goosebumps, go on YouTube and watch Triple H's return at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. One of the loudest returns you'll ever hear.
So I'm not the only one that likes Triple H, then.
No. And seriously, like if you're watching this, you've never seen it or you haven't seen it in a while, and you just want to hear a loud, as JR says, the loudest sustained roar he's ever heard. Like it just. The music hits, the place goes nuts, and then he comes out, and somehow they go into a whole other register.
Right.
That's just astronomical. With Rock versus Hogan, you had the return of Hulk Hogan coming home to WWF.
Yeah, you know? 18 years after he started WrestleMania, man, or one of the founding fathers of it, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a great match.
Yeah, and the return of Shawn Michaels to wrestling also. That happened in SummerSlam 02.
True.
And I think in 19 he wrestled Jericho in a great match.
That's in Seattle, right?
Yeah. So still plenty of really great stuff. Wasn't quite attitude, you know, exactly.
Yeah. So for you to put it in that box of the Attitude Era, I get where you're trying to end at WrestleMania 19. I don't disagree with that at all. But definitely things then aren't associated with the Attitude Era. It's the DX chop being formed. It's Austin 316. It's all that stuff. But by then, you're talking coming up on, not quite 10 years, but 7-8 years out.
Yeah. Because at this point, you know, the Attitude was born of the WWF's need to draw eyes to their product.
Yeah.
At this point, WCW gone, they, you know, all they have to do is be like, "Hi, we're the only game in town."
Right.
So the people are going to watch regardless.
Right.
So, you know, with their priorities shifting, the tone of what they're doing shift too. But still, some great stuff happened. Mm-hmm. And I just think, you know, once Austin and Rock really fully, truly went away, they took, you know, that was...
So 19, that really ends. Closing the book. Who wins that one? Remind me.
Rock.
Rock wins.
Yeah.
Austin walks off into the sunset.
Yep.
And Rock himself, after that...
Yeah, no, he wrestled Goldberg the next month at Backlash.
Right.
And then he was gone until WrestleMania 20, where he teamed with Foley against Evolution. And then he was gone you know, he made a few sporadic, you know, he came to protect Eugene from the coach at one point.
Right.
You know, he would make a few spot, you know,
appearances.
I think WrestleMania 20 was his last match until he came back against, or until he came back with Cena against Miz and R-Truth. Might be wrong on that, but no, I think.
Yeah, you know. That seems right. It seems right because I ordered that pay-per-view specifically for that reason, and promptly wished I didn't.
Yes.
Though I thought Rock Punk and Rock Cena at WrestleMania were very good.
Oh, yeah. No, the stuff he's done since he came back has been very good.
I was glad he came back. I mean, you talk about pops when he actually came back time.
Oh, yeah.
That was a great pop.
I think you and I were excited. We're a little too excited to text each other like, oh, my God, yeah. Here he is.
I think that and the night Lesnar returned, too, was another one. We talk about the crowd goes crazy and then crazier in one breath. Because that was one I didn't think anyone would see.
No. I think I watched that one about 30 times before I went to rent to bed that night.
I did, too. So the Attitude Era, then shortly after that, they have to get the F out because of the lawsuit.
Yeah. So
the Worldwide Life Fund.
So then the panda people sue them for
panda people.
Yeah. Well, actually, no. Wasn't it that they sued the panda people and lost? I forget the specifics, if memory serves, it sounded like Vince was just kind of being petty and it blew up in his face. And so then they have to get the F out.
That was not on the DVD of the 50 years of WWF, that World Wrestling Entertainment that I watched.
Shocking that they left that part out.
They made Vince into a hero during the steroid trial. My dad took these slings and arrows thrown against him and defeated them in the court of law.
Well, he was persecuted unjustly.
Yes.
Because who could have ever thought that Vince McMahon was giving his guys steroids? Look at the wrestlers from that era. They weren't doing steroids.
Warlord just ate a lot of chicken.
He did. He ate a lot of eggs.
So the Attitude Era has come to an end.
Yes.
And that has been the first three parts. Part four is going to be fun. We're going to take a look at kind of the bad and the ugly of the Attitude Era.
Not going to be quite so glowing in our praise next time.
Because that is, to me, you and I have discussed, again, I wasn't wrapped up in it like you were. I cannot deny the legacy of the Attitude Era, and we'll talk about that in episode four.
Yeah.
But I also think sometimes people can look back at golden eras, and they're golden eras.
Yeah.
Don't deny that. But you can sometimes look back and forget the fluff that was there. You look at the first cast of Saturday Night Live. It, of course, was legendary. It's amazingly legendary. Yeah. But they had some bad sketches, too, believe it or not. You look back at Major League Baseball in the 50s. People say the best decade. There was, 10 teams. They all played within, a stone's throw of each other on the East Coast. And the games were relatively boring home run fests, when you really look at it. Not taking away anything from that era of Mays, Mantle, and Snyder and all that great stuff. And Don Larson's perfect game. Yeah. But I think people can look with rose-colored glasses. So I look at the Attitude Era, and I've always kind of debated with you that, there's some things in the Attitude Era that I don't think helped wrestling any more than any bad things now.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you.
You're right there with me. However, you've always said, how could you have missed the greatest era in wrestling?
Seriously.
And you have walked me through it.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, sir.
You're welcome.
I'm going to go catch some stuff on the WWE.com archives.
Do it. Well, no, go on YouTube. It's a lot
easier.
Faster. Yeah.
Okay.
Less ads.
Yeah. So that has been a look back with Joe Ruggiero at the Attitude Era. Please send us an email, wrestlingviewpoint@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at WrestlingVN. That's a capital VN. And follow us on Twitter and tell us what you thought and your favorite memory of the Attitude Era. And don't forget to follow Joe Ruggiero on Twitter.
Joe Rue 23.
Yell at him with all the facts he may or may not have gotten wrong.
I get to the facts eventually.
You actually are a library of the Attitude Era.
I am. It's just a little dusty up there sometimes.
Well, folks, what we've got to realize here is our correspondent here, our Attitude Era expert, Joe Ruggiero, was doing all of this with nothing more than a couple notes scribbled on his paper. You put the time in back in the day watching every moment of this stuff.
because I knew that someday you would have a podcast about wrestling.
You'd be sitting
and my
on,
time would come.
On this pleather couch.
And I'd be sitting on this plush pleather
with my,
couch.
My new microphone that is so good on this end that it's picking up street sounds and my neighbor's making dinner.
Well, at least it's actually plugged in this time.
Yeah, it's plugged in this time. Nah, shut up. So I appreciate it, Joe. Again, follow Wrestling Viewpoint Network on Twitter at WrestlingVN. Don't not forget to find us on Facebook, Wrestling Viewpoint Network, and follow Dan Farron's Wrestling Classic, California Classic Wrestling, yes. Facebook page.
You can do it.
It's been a long day. It's coming down to an end. Okay. And we're going to have more episodes. But we will be back next week with part 4 of a look at the Attitude Era, where Joe is going to break down some of the good, bad, and ugly of the Attitude Era, and I'll nod my head and go, uh-huh, told you so.
Yep.
All right. For Joe Ruggiero, I'm Ken Napsok. Thanks for listening to the Wrestling Viewpoint Network.